So, welcome to the third Radio Salon as part of Moving in November Festival. And tonight, as our guests, we have the artists. And from Esitys Radio, present is Janina and
Tuomas.
And if you would introduce yourselves as well.
Benoit.
Hi, Elina is here.
Hello, Aisa from Manila.
So really nice that you can be here with us tonight, and you're welcome.
And we always start these discussions with a request to the artists to describe the piece that you just performed on this festival. If someone who didn't experience it is listening, that if each of you could like briefly describe what is the piece.
I'm just going to chip in before you decide who's going to go first and tell the listeners that we also have a live audience tonight, because we've never had this before, and the people listening might hear you laughing or making other human sounds, so just that they know where it's coming from. But yes, so if one of you could start with describing your works in some way.
Silence.
We can have take a silence.
Okay. It's a solo in my work, Benoît Lachamp. I make a solo that's called Lifeguard, and it's the first. What is the work about? I decided to change the kind of work I'm doing, to go from I did before work outside of stage, but I decided to make a trilogy of works out, not on stage, in rooms where the public would be circulating, and to like I am very much, the work is very much about the movement of perception and the movement around everybody, and how affect is the choreographer. This is something I say during the performance. Where first people come in, spectators come in three time frame. First time frame lasts half an hour, then for a short amount of performance, like maybe like 15 or 20. And then after half an hour, the double maybe join in for 15 minutes. And then the rest of the spectator joins for an hour 15. And it's a small amount of spectators, I think, and 100 people maximum. So it is purposefully done in a very intimate way. A lot of the work is about touch in this piece, Lifeguard. There's a lot of different kinds of touch. Touch of the gaze, touch of sound, the body of sound around us, producing sound as body. Also recognizing, acknowledging where I'm from. So I'm from Canada, and Canada is a colonial country. And I was born in Montreal, which is built on the Mohawk territory. So a lot of the work, and it's unceded territory, unceded. So I mean, it hasn't been given, it hasn't taken. So a lot of the work is about seeing how I'm dealing with this, and how actually the information that I get as a mover comes from the original people. I do somatic work, right? I've been doing a lot of somatic work and realizing that the essence of the work, of somatic work, is very ancient. Yeah? And it's like, so there's a lot of recalling the ancient part in the self. It's living in the original people in Canada and many, many places. But in the society that I come from, it has been very repressed, and not repressed in many ways. So it's important to acknowledge where I come from, and to acknowledge also all the names, many names, like Canada is for Canada. Canada means the village where people meet. So many names of places have been taken from indigenous words, names, and without necessarily teaching us, the non-indigenous people, what it means. You know, so there's been a lot of appropriation at all level. You know, I'm not saying that what I'm doing it does not appropriate, because it does to a certain level. And but I cannot go inside the most authentic part of my body without referring to the original people, because culturally it's a lot more original. And so to get into deep somatic work, you meet original ways, right? So a lot of the work is about approaching dance with a very in a collective body, collective awareness, and seeing how we are being danced, and to question also the choreography in the same way, so that we are being choreographed by each other, by presence, by our thoughts, by how people move, how people think, how people breathe. We're choreographing each other. And so to recognize that as I'm trying to elaborate a work, and how the air around us is movement, and the body inside this movement as well. So the whole process of performance is to acknowledge. And some of it is to recognize the personal pain as well, because it is a very, very, it's not a place to, it's a very comfortable place to live, but with a very harsh history and present time, as far as recognition is concerned. So it's a very difficult subject in that way. And yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Elena or Jason?
Yes. I and my fellow artists, we created a performance called Prune de Mer, and I will just very briefly, like, just yes, describe it. It's this kind of vocal and corporal and visual sonata, and there is five female dancers that are dancing these ring dances, and the material in the ring dance is it has a feministic agenda of emancipation, in a sense that how a dancer finally can dance with her desire, and what kind of movements this desire and obsession and fetishism and these subconscious intimacies, how they move you, and how that movement comes out from the body. And yeah, the dramaturgical form is ring dance and different kinds of ring dances, and yeah, and there is a huge organ composition that we work with there. And yeah, we have still 7 performances ahead of us, so I rest my case now, so because also, like, before we showed it to the audience, I had certain, of course, personal idea of it, we all had, but now also when we have been opening up that to an audience, now we are like having all the voices in our heads, what is it about or something, so I'm kind of digesting everything now, because it's not anymore ours, it's also performance of the audience as well, so if I can leave it here.
Yes, maybe to say that your 5 performers, including you on stage,
yes,
like just as a simple act compared to the Benoit is doing a solo. And
yes, and it's very much a huge collaboration between 8 artists, a lighting and visual designer and composer, and then dramaturge and costume designer, and we have like really done it as a Gesamtkunstwerk way, so yeah. Thank you.
So Princess is actually the first part of a trilogy called Happy Land, and Happy Land as an Uber project investigates Filipino labor, performance of happiness, and production of fantasy within this happiness empire, which is Disneyland. So Princess is a duet of 2 Filipino performers or performance artists. And just to simplify, these 2 Filipino performers hijack this white skinned archetype, happy girl, princess, Snow White, basically. So the idea is that we basically corrupt the system of an embodied Snow White with our own bodies and histories and context. So on stage you see 2 Snow Whites being performed by 2 Filipinos, and they build up the vocabulary in the beginning towards from, let's say, the stage design is this the first, my first impetus was like a drawing that came to life, because I mean Snow White was first and foremost, you know, animation. So in that sense, this stage design was referring to the blank white paper going into the audience, and it could be also like the cinema spilling into reality. So you have this dance floor hang that way. So in that sense, these 2 figures were slowly constructing this figure into embodiment and bringing the kind of the narrative fantasy in the film into the live audience. And then this kind of hybrid embodiment of Filipinos performing Snow White gets really close to the audience through interaction, and at some point hijacks the speech, the narrative of Snow White, like organically from inside. So a certain subtext from our own bodies would come out like on top or through the text that Snow White is talking. Yeah.
And Benoit, you already went into it a little bit, but maybe, I mean, you can continue, or the others. I'm also interested, what were the sort of problems or questions that you had as you were starting the work, or where did it grow from?
There was a definite problems of appropriation, not in a nice way. And this is difficult to speak about this because it's very the colonial history of Canada has been very, it's been about hiding a lot of things, hiding identity, hiding the real history, and getting very false, and I was educated with a very hidden history. I was taught a very hidden history, also in my youth, I had a lot of visitation dreams, which really marked my life in very deep ways, and I was always attracted to more deep work, more ancient work, and but fed a lot of stereotypes. So how do I live it? That is, and then how do I get out of living it? How do I look at truth inside of me? I don't want to represent, although I am, the colonial body, because it is I disagree completely with the dancing of the colonial body. I don't like it. I don't like the way that I've been taught dance should be. I don't like, so I'm in disagreement with a lot of those values. And so I decided to make work and start to look at more deep values inside the body, and how maybe I can change my body if I cannot change much else. So I'm trying to, in that way, decolonialize my body, but the problem comes into how to do it. That's the difficulty I'm facing. I would say, it's a very touchy subject. You know, what my grandmothers were living through, what my grandmother was living. And then I'm looking at her ancestrality, and what has been passed through her ancestrality into my body.
So I think we can breathe out a bit and relax. Yeah. We don't have to be so good with taking turns. We can just chat. So just like whatever were you bothered by, why did this work come about, that piece that you were presenting now at the festival? Just any sort of question or problem?
I guess when I was making the piece, one question from the dramaturgs that I was working with that it really irritated me a lot was like, where is the Filipino inside the piece? And both Russ and I were like, aren't we Filipinos? You know, so it's like this, there's this, somehow we have to perform our exoticness, somehow it has to either come out in one way or another. And I was really, I guess it was a good question for them to consistently ask, because then it was kind of a, I guess, you know, something to struggle with or against, something to kind of sharpen that, like the discourse inside the work is actually that these, you know, basically these narratives has so dominated our, you know, culture, our childhood, that you can't really take it away from us, but at the same time, we want to, in a way, you know, kind of reconfigure it from the inside, rather than just to accept what it is and to, go along with the normative ideologies inside. So it was really using this kind of dominant popular cultural legacy, or you would say from America, and to really kind of ingest it and kind of, you know, kind of spit it out in a different different way. So it was an interesting back and forth discussion with our dramaturgs, there were three of them, and so I thought that it was really a good question to put forward, and in that sense it kind of sharpened the piece to what it is now. Yeah.
And where did the piece start? Like, how do you remember sort of the first time you thought about making it?
Yeah, back like 10 years ago during my bachelor's thesis, I documented the morale of the company, a ballet company in the Philippines, wherein half of its company members went to work to Hong Kong Disneyland as entertainers, as dancers, as performers there. Because in 2006, Hong Kong Disneyland opened, so there was a demand for highly skilled performers, and they did an audition in the Philippines, and then, you know, there was this huge talent and brain drain, so a lot of the top companies, like theater companies and dance companies, lost half of its members, and everybody was just like, you know, why, and, you know, asking this question, a bit like really disappointed with the artistic community and things like this. And so it was a huge shock then, but after quite some time it has normalized, and it's kind of the natural trajectory of artists. You know, after school you go into a company, after the company, because of lack of artistic opportunities or wanting financial stability, that would be a good option for most performing artists. And I guess that was the core, okay, why are Filipinos so in demand, or why do we have the capacity to enter this kind of work? And then, of course, with inside this Disney park, it was very apparent what kind of labor they were doing. So they were basically fillers. So, you know, there would be for example, a starfish in Little Mermaid, and then a monkey in Tarzan, and then, you know, ballroom dancers in Beauty and the Beast. So, that, you know, they were quite this valuable body shifting from one vocabulary into another. But there would never be the lead roles, because all the lead roles are basically coming from Western fairy tale narratives. So all of them are white skinned. So all the leads would definitely go to Westerners, which are paid higher, would have housing benefits, for example, and things like this. So it was like, I think with Princess, it was the performance of impossibilities. You know, it's impossible to, in the workforce, to be Snow White. I mean, like, out of all the princesses, she's the whitest, so let's let's take on this archetype. And then at the same time, it's two people. Normally, you know, in this land, it should only be one princess, like Snow White. There's this artist, a Finnish artist who did the work. She basically was Snow White, but they, like the police, the Disney police, like stopped her from going in because apparently it's not possible to have, you know. And then, yeah, the fact that the other Snow White is actually a man. So it's not, you know, a lot of these contradictions, a lot of this, yeah, the idea of also reproducing something to the point that the reproduction is corrupted and that it can actually kind of like overcome the original. So it's, yeah, this is kind of the beginnings. Also, when we were researching, like, what is it to perform happiness? And when I was looking at the Filipino performers, they didn't really have one specific way of performing it, since they were, you know, going from one character to another character to another. So it's the state of happiness that they were performing. It's not actually the form. While with Snow White, it was a very specific form. It's just singular. And that we had to really learn, like the way she talked, the way she looked, the way, you know, the structure of the body, the structure of the hands, the basically through and through becoming her. So it's, a kind of going into this, the form of happiness that is the princess, which is, yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking when Benoit was saying about the changing your body, decolonizing your body, that you also really, really transform in this way,
yeah.
Very in detailed way, how your body is. Or that's how it seems.
Yeah. So it's kind of like a hijacking something. It's like, I think,
I think Pilvi Takala, is it Pilvi Takala, the Finnish artist whose piece? Yeah.
Who was Snow White?
Yeah. I didn't really know actually that it was a Finnish artist. I was just, you know, I was told that there was this artist before. I was like, oh, okay. And then it was Finnish, and then, okay, there's a connection here.
What about Elina? Do you want to share something about the, what Janina was asking about the problem?
Like a question or a problem? Like, why did this work start? Or why did you make this piece? Where did it start?
I've been thinking a lot, like I bet all of us artists are thinking in these current times, that what should we do and how to create and what is relevant, and what should we do about the world? Like, how to make art in these times, and why make art? And we talked a lot. That is it still relevant to dance human dances? And dance as a human. And now when we have done it, so many audience members, especially men, they want to see us as creatures. Like we are amoeba or creature or some ectoplasma or something else than a female human body. And this is very interesting to me how people are projecting all kinds of stuff to us. And based on those, that someone said that this is a Genesis or this is a book of Moses or something, like I can answer now that it's still relevant to dance those movements and claim that they are based on female, a desire and psychoactiveness of a female subject. rather than the subject of a whatever creature, you know, in a political way. Yeah, so that is my answer also to that torment or, yeah.
And what do you think about this projecting, that is it something that you also want, that people project on?
Sure, I will not control, like my art is not about controlling association or connotations for sure, but like, yeah, it has been very interesting to hear these things and how also some members of the audience, they don't relate at all to that kind of movement language. They feel that it's not their language at all, not their body, that they are like out. They watch us as objects, which is not like pornographical, I don't mean in that sense, but like that I now watch this coffee cup and then. So that makes me wonder a bit, like, yeah.
Then if the experience of the body can be that different, or the expression that takes over the body, or?
Yeah, that's something, because we are not representing women there, we are dancing our desires out, so it's, then it should maybe resonate at some point, like, I don't know, it's interesting.
And how? Can you tell something about the practice, or how do you dance and desire?
We have started to work with orality and saliva and vulvic area and these connections between those quite anatomical places, and my work is based on anatomical approach and a physiological approach. I never direct meanings or like anything psychological. My work is not psychological, and sometimes people want to see it in that way, in that narrative, but it's, for me, it's corporal abstraction with psychoactive processes rather than psychological narratives of a person or a gender. But like, yeah, so from there we just start from there, and there is a lot of power in that connection. And I've done it also, I've worked with males and also transgender people with the same. So the same material, same kind of material comes out. So it's not only that only females dance in that way. Similar stuff comes out with this connection, and that we kind of sensitize our whole structure. So that has been very interesting to see as well, because I teach a lot and I have had these laboratories based on this method in different contexts before this Prume de Mer. Yeah, so there is something very essential power in this connection.
But do you think that there is a linkage, or there's a parallel between the amoeba and the body?
A parallel?
Yeah, I mean, the body is amoeba to a certain extent when it thinks of its cellular structure, cellular memory.
No, I think it's, for me, it's, I don't know, of course it's subjective work also, like very personal work, so for me, maybe it's more about as a human regression or something, like going back as a, like before language or when we were babies or something. So I don't go that far, because then it's kind of, I don't know, phantasma or something.
Yeah, it's art.
Sure. I think that's art also, that what we create.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though it's not that, yeah.
And have you, Benoit and Elina, seen each other's work?
Unfortunately, I was going to see your work on Thursday, but then I burned my, what is this called?
Foot,
yeah, in my premiere, so I was in a hospital or something, yeah, and also on Friday I didn't dance the piece because of this, so but now I'm back. I have this artificial skin implants.
Wow.
Hello, radio listeners. So I'm sorry I was not able to come see you or I saw you because of this situation. Yeah, I was coming. So. Yeah, but I don't know.
No, that's great. You can then only guess from how you speak.
I haven't seen your work either. I haven't seen it. Mm. So, and you know, but no, it's like for me, the it's funny because you know, I say like men, especially men see as amoeba, but I see myself amoeba like in work, you know, because they're the yeah, and I don't for me it's not imaginary. It's all the reflex, the primary reflex of a cell. Mm. Amoeba is the most like ancient cell life form that comes from the cell. So it everything in us has amoeba reflex. Yeah. so in that way, you know, for me,
mm-hmm. I understand. You know, yeah, I understand.
So that. And I'm also fascinated by that we have a many species memory. We have la mémoire végétale as well. Mm-hmm. You know, so that we're energetically able to address all forms of life. That our body has a tool to address all forms of life because it comes from us. It comes from all forms of life. Mm-hmm. So in that way, you know, I think that's one of my most most like I say like pertinent question that's happening now is like, okay, so to destructuralize the colonial body is to question, you know, what it has limited, so I can go back to essential knowledge, and strip that all that standardization, and go, no, actually, my body can be a lot more than what it is meant named to be. It has a lot more potential, a lot more knowledge, and I can talk a lot of nonsense, but yeah.
But it's also a question of how you frame politically your work. So I think I've been framing in this work for certain reasons.
Of course.
With this. Thank you for saying that. Yeah, it's of course. It's a question of ancient sensitivity as well and this fragility and.
Asa, you've seen Elina's Prune de Mer. Did you see amoebas or female bodies or something? Mm. What did you connect to?
I guess I was reading a lot on the internet about witches. So this kind of like ritualistic coming together and kind of this, it felt more like like female kind of, I guess, questioning her agency and kind of working through this, I don't know, ritual. It felt quite timely in the sense that, you know, especially where I'm coming from, with like machismo and misogyny is so strong in my society and in different societies, or generally like the like atmosphere is a bit going towards that. Mm. And it feels like it's pushing against this kind of, this is how I was seeing it.
Did you see it as a reaction or proactive?
Definitely proactive. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
We were talking a lot with dancers as well, that we deal also with representation, but we actually reclaim the representation itself, so that we are not interpretation of a representation, but we take the representation and we work through it. We use that, and I think that that's one very important proactive gesture for us. Yeah, that we can play with very different levels of documentation, representation, reliving, reactive, proactive, and everything is present there. And yeah.
You also did, I saw this piece I saw 5 years ago called Macho Dancer, where you took the male body or changed your body into a male, I guess. Yeah, it's interesting, sort of parallel or contrast or something to this.
Yeah,
Elena's work.
But for me, because I got a production place and money, I wanted to give that to female dancers who have been dancing since, like, they have been learning so lot, like so many techniques since they were 4 already, and then they come to the field and it's so nice to give them salary and production place to work. And yeah, that's kind of very basic feminism for me, at least, that I give a salary to female dancers, hardworking female dancers. And I work also with male and with transgender, so I'm not all like bullying other genders, but like, yeah, this is my...
But do you think that if you'd be working only with female dancers that you would be bullying by that fact, or can it be an artistic choice? I mean, I guess I'm opinionated.
That's great.
I was exposing an opinion, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
No, it's fine. I don't know, in Finland, was it that feministic discourse, we were so close to like starting to develop it into many more wider and broader sense, but then something happened. I've been also working as a curator, and I teach a lot in theater academy and universities of arts, and something happened to the discourse. I don't know what.
When?
Yeah, it's interesting. Maybe 2 years ago or something, 1 year or 2 years ago. So based on that, maybe I choose to work again with females on stage, because that I smelled something was in the air in our field here. Like, we gave a time for that a bit, but then let's move on into other more important topics in art policy. So yeah, I don't know what happened, or I know, but I don't know if I'm gonna say it here on the radio.
I'm here, tell after.
Yeah, but this is but of course it's my interpretation of what happened. But really, like, also as a point of, like, as a curator position, no more that kind of applications that dealt with those feministic discourse, or the wish was still to investigate and widen the feministic discourse. It disappeared. It's very interesting. More creatures than amoebas were having applications. No, I'm just joking. Yeah.
But so you started by saying it broadened, so the thinking of the feminist thinking broadened, which I understood then it became sort of an understanding of not only the allowing space for the female but also allowing shape for the queer and the sort of, and not only to have to do with gender, but also to have to do with minorities, and sort of not anything that was away from the, let's say, the colonialist body or the
patriarchal.
The patriarchal. So, in that sense, the applications of the amoebas would be within that wave, I would say.
Sure.
So then.
But then we didn't they didn't use anymore the word feminism and mm-hmm. as this bigger flag for inviting all, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
We started to use different headlines, I would say. But yeah, I don't know if that's an interesting topic here now, but like, yeah.
Well, there's something definitely about the body that is presented in all of these three pieces, that mm-hmm. somehow it is going away, like Benoist is from that patriarchal, like all of them are dealing with how do I not present this body, but I'm presenting an alternative, or I'm getting rid of something mm-hmm. and presenting an alternative maybe.
But what is more important to me rather than gender is psychoactive processes that can invite all genders and all creatures as well. And maybe this is like, it's not my personal diary, it's a project of feminism in a way. And yeah, maybe it's that we change psychology into a bit more deeper, reflective idea of coexistence and existing here in this society and in these realities, and how to be empathic and sensitive towards those processes.
This reminds me of the Snow Whites when they sort of lose the Disney script and change language, and then they say something about intersectionality, but I couldn't understand the rest. But there was like feminist discourse.
Mm. Well, I mean, the work is already that.
Yes.
But we just wanted to kind of throw in these words. Mm. We weren't really talking about the theories at that point. We're just saying that, oh, you know, we need to throw out this word so that they kind of think that we know these things. playing with the audience. I mean, the work should speak for itself in terms of feminist, post-colonial discourse, and kind of it's in the engagement of the audience with the work that these, you know, discourses should play with. It was just
It's nice that you say that, because I also thought that it was kind of underlining something that was already there without saying.
Yeah. How we need to say these words, because you know we have to be critical. Mm-hmm. So it was just for us to kind of also toying, like playing mm-hmm. around with our own awareness, or have to be aware.
I didn't want to either name the work as a ritual, my work, or as a witchcraft, because I don't work with witchcraft. I don't know what that means even. And for me it was very important that we don't, if we are not dealing with ritual as such, then I would not make fake ritual either. Do this, you know, this representation of a ritual or representation of a witch, because I didn't want to say that is that, but I'm happy if that rises by watching it. But for me it was important to just describe the method, actually, in the work, rather than put a narrative
such. Can we talk more about methods? So if you go on with your method, Elina, how did you then start working on the ring dances? Like, what was the ring dance? How did you practice it?
Ring is a dramaturgy for me, rather than a form of ritual as such, but it's a dramaturgy. You can, like, always trust the ring. Like, if you work with instant choreography as a dancer and live dramaturgy, you know your path and you just dance there. So it's quite simple. But then we wanted to also draw the circle or the ring even more strong, and then we started to use smaller rings. Like, it's so simple structure. But somehow this 70 minutes piece with these rings, maybe it's some kind of metaphor of how everything changes, but not at the same time. I don't know.
And is there an energy or something that like that, that the cyclical dramaturgy or repeating that shape creates?
Yeah, we work a lot with the organ composition, which is kind of inevitable. So we use the word inevitable dance.
Okay.
So vajamaton, inevitable. Yeah. And that creates compositions and energies inside, but then you go back to the ring.
Mm-hmm.
And you commit to that you don't change that. It's a commitment. So actually it also deals a lot with the concept of commitment as well, this work.
Yeah. And did you always practice the material in going around in the ring?
Many months. Very exhausting.
And Asa or Benoit, something about the methods that you use in the work?
Well, in the beginning, it was really the idea of how do we perform happiness, or how do Filipinos perform happiness. So we just were running around the studio and kind of, having a high on adrenaline. And we were thinking, oh, this is not working. It's like, it's too vague. So we were looking at the princesses and how they were like just in this perpetual state of limbo happiness. So we're like, okay, maybe somehow we focus on the princess, and in particular Snow White, that she's the first one, so she's the archetype, and also she's a breakthrough of Disney in terms of full-length animation. So she was pioneering many things in that sense. And she was also the most far away in terms of representation. Like, her voice is definitely infantilized. I mean, she's 13 to begin with. So there's quite a challenge to embody that kind of form. And so we were looking at different materials. A lot of the material comes from the film itself, so scenes from the house, and we also kind of was a bit, it made sense that because a lot of the material ended up around housework, baking pie, talking about how dirty the house is, and from beginning to end, she's basically cleaning. Cleaning the queen's palace, cleaning the dwarf's place, baking food for them, asking them to wash their hands, basically taking care of them. So, compounded with the Filipino body, this affective housework becomes quite intense. And you can, of course, the domestic helper trope is being read into the work because of this combination. And so we were also looking at the merchandise, like coloring books, bags, like the visual culture wherein princess occupies. So all this kind of poses and was coming from that. and of course the interaction in the Disney parks, how they interacted with the park goers. You know, it's a very specific kind of affective work happening there in inside the character, and the way they banter, it's still within the narrative of the character that they're performing. So it was interesting how, you know, you get sucked in into a fantasy, like a lived fantasy, and yeah, so this was, we were really like, you know, stop and go, stop and replay the film hundreds of times and kind of really trying to understand whether it's a, you know, a in-breath before saying the line, you know, so very, very intricate, detailed work, which is, I guess, how I work. Like with mantra dancers, it's also very detailed. It's like an integrity with the form, because in that sense, the form carries with it its own affect. So you just trust that the form, you stay true to the form and a certain relation to the audience and the performer just arises between this parameter. Yeah.
And the double character highlights that, because it's so visible that it's so exact, because you do so much of unison.
Yeah. If I only do it alone, they would say, you know, it's easy, you know, it's something that any woman can do. But actually, it's very it's very particular. And what me and my co-performer found out, that it was, the whole piece is about containment. Like, you really have to be in a certain state the whole time to perform this softness. So it's all about kind of being soft, like letting the audience, you know, take you in and smiling and being insistent on that smile, even though that you're like, the muscles can't anymore, but it's like, you know, the form is like this.
Yeah, I was thinking about the smile. How have you practiced it?
Yeah, it was difficult in the beginning, because most of my works were not smiling. It was a bit like, you know, a bit bland face. And here it's just like there is a demand to constantly smile. And in the beginning it's like, yeah, I mean, now we have more, what do you call this, stamina for it? We have stamina for smiling now. So it's a bit, it's already there. Also, it's nice because you know, you're not really in the mood of smiling, but you have to do that. And when once you're in there, you the form also affects the state of your mind. I was interviewing like some Filipinos working in Hong Kong, Disneyland, and they were like, "Oh, you know, you don't really feel like working today, but as soon as you step into the park and you have to perform this way, you kind of, then you also feel happy." So it's kind of this.
That's apparently what happens to our brain. Like, that's why they have the laughter yoga and stuff. So if you just make yourself laugh, then your brain will think, "Oh, we are doing great."
Yeah.
And then it starts creating dopamine, and you will start feeling good.
Yeah.
Mm.
So
yeah, I've been working with laughing pelvis, smiling pelvis.
Great.
Yeah, so that's how
it's kind of opening up.
Yeah. So that's but I've been seeing the duo, but I've seen the solo. And is there a link to you between both processes? What's there, what parallel
in terms
between
of
both
process
pieces?
They're quite similar in the sense that it's really this training the body to become training the body in a very specific vocabulary, and in that way you become what the subject is. So in Macho Dancer, it was like 1 year of just going to the macho clubs, asking the macho dancers to teach me the movement, also going to the gym. So it's kind of like really trying to put that your body into that condition artificially, because I can't work in a club. I mean, I'm not allowed to work in a club because macho dancers are supposed to be straight men only. So there's a very specific performer for that. And for princess, we were like, okay, how can we become more princess-like? And then we were thinking, maybe we should do like a princess academy course, you know, like an obstacle course that we have to, you know, sit at the table, drink tea, and then walk and kind of fall down, you know. So we kind of set up like a parkour. Like a princess parkour. And like, okay, here we say thank you. Okay, here we walk up like this. So it's like children's play.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's a process. And then we were thinking, okay, maybe we look up like princess parkour, princess academy on. I'm sure that somebody has thought of it. And we were completely shocked that actually Disney has thought of it. They have this princess academies everywhere, mm-hmm. in the Philippines and in India. Which was really like, I mean, I could understand if it's for adults, but you know, if it's for children, it's really brainwashing. Mm. So you have this room full of Indian kids, like all in the same kind of Snow White costume, Cinderella costume, like, and then you have like the actual princesses teaching them how to dance. In the Philippines, it was even like, okay, tea time, and then there's actually servants in the, as part of the kind of academy, and then teaching you how to sit properly, teaching you how to, like, we were just completely like, oh, this is so wrong. It's like,
that's insane.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So in reality, there's really a brainwashing that's happening to, I mean, of course, children's, perception is so malleable that, mm-hmm. I mean, anything sparkling, you kind of get drawn to it. And if this sparkling thing is, you know, in a gown and kind of like has a form like this and like that, and then you get fed into this narrative. So it's quite a problematic narrative. But then I guess what this princess work proposes is that when you're an adult, you can, I don't know, come back to it and kind of just, I re-digest the narrative for kind of.
It becomes a queer action, in a way.
Yeah. Definitely. Mm.
What do you think about the audience? Any of you? The works have quite specific. Each of them have quite specific relation. To audience.
Yeah, for me, the other audience is the it's funny to see the audience as a choreographer, because that is a bit too role oriented. Mm. But the choreographic concept is that the action or the presence of the individual, of each person, and how they manage their bodies through their presence is choreographic to the dance. It's an element. Their own process of just being there is choreographic in itself, and the choreographic information, because presence triggers energy and triggers interaction. And so for me, because I like to do somatic work, it's very difficult to do somatics in the way that I like to address it in the frontal setup. It's extremely difficult because it's all based on, okay, so empathetic relation and closeness and addressing energy around our bodies and flowing with energy around the bodies, or looking at dynamics and adjusting to the dynamics and flowing with it. And when everybody's like sitting in a role, then it's very hard to pinpoint the energy and to be with that kind of that. So for me now, it is it's very important that the spectator has a lot more choice of movement, a lot more and to encourage that as much as possible. So that other experiences arise, you know. And that it can be more playful, So even though my personal subject is very intense, the performance in itself is also very playful. It's very joy oriented. I do touch some very sad parts in the piece, and it's shared, you know, in the process. But it is what is shared between people that for me is most important, as what choreography is, or what audience is you know, containers like my body for process, and so we share that, and we see how we move together. With my performing as a central excuse for it to happen, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. Although I do perform in it quite a lot, but the performance is strictly based on response and like how we say gliding on the bodies and the energy of the spectators. And moving with what's happening, allowing that to dance me. So then,
yeah. What about Elena? We don't have to, that everybody takes the turn and so on, but I'm just interested in like,
yes.
They are so different.
Sure.
Relations.
In this particular work, I enjoy a lot the aim, which is that you watch us doing this now, and you don't participate corporally, but you, like, the proposal is that you can participate in your own psychoactivity there. By the way, like, we, how do you call it, like, there is something, because we use a lot, like, how we have been talking these quite big words, but how the soul comes out from the face, and then something miraculous happens when you when you dance with your whole structure, that it's not demonstrative, it's not demonstrating some affection or something, it's movement that comes also, that activates the facial area also. My belief is that in that, that activates the audience as well, this part. But then yesterday some person said, oh no, I was very activated by your feet. And I didn't watch the face area at all, but only the feet, and that activated me. But like, our idea has been that we are in a way substitute bodies for the audience, but they don't move, so they need to deal with the situation that the energy maybe goes inwards, and then maybe it comes out in some forms later, or in that some people have been crying a lot, some laughing, some nothing happens, like, and total rejection or. So I enjoy this a lot, and I tend to think, because I know quite many that comes here to Finland to see this piece, oh, this and this and this and that. All of them are like quite familiar people. So I try to think that they are intimate, they have their own intimacy, and I only see like 75 intimacies there, and this is why, how we have been speaking with the dancers as well, that there is no yoni in our tones, there is this intimacy and this, this and this. And it's also very nice to perform abroad because you don't need to deal that at all. But here we needed to do the shift and like talk about it more. But yeah, we try to be substitute bodies there also. I don't know if that works, but I watched it Friday because I was not able to dance. And like my body got so and I was like, ah, is this work about this frustration or something, energy that doesn't come out? I don't know, it can vary a lot. Mm. So, yeah, I'm very interested to hear more how people have been experiencing that. But we are in early days still.
Mm. It's quite interesting, this thing that the specific people, like, that it's different here and abroad. Or,
I just performed in South Korea, other piece, and I didn't know any of them. There were like 200 people. Yeah, it was very good to perform there and then come here because that created this idea that there are only intimacies there. In a way, it was very lovely bridge. Between, yeah.
Well, for Princess, the audience interaction is really important in the sense that you really bring this entity closer to the audience. So the performance of sincerity in its all its construction gets tested between the performer and the audience, and you. Yeah, it's all about sincerity, but the let's say the boundary between artificial and real is really blurred. I mean, you're not, because the we need to be through and through Snow White. So Snow White wouldn't say this and wouldn't say that. You know, she has to be. She's kind. She's just. Sincerely kind. So in that sense, you know, we perform this through and through. But at the same time, of course, it's a performance. So there's this contradiction inside. But at the same time, I also personally like this construction because then I can somehow enjoy the sincerity, you know, that you're performing. That you can actually be nice to people through her, like you know, like go approach different people with this Snow White facade, but at the same time
didn't feel that nice.
But at the same time, I don't know, I'm quite comfortable inside this artificial, I mean this character, but then also very aware that it's also kind of, you know, a kind of a Filipino stereotype to be nice and to be kind and to be, you know, I don't know, it's just kind of complicated in that sense. And in each context, in each location that we perform it, the audience responds very different, very, very different. Mm-hmm. Like for this tour, we were in Bergen, Vienna, and Helsinki is the last one. Bergen was quite, they were so easily enthusiastic, like very, very like very game, you know. Like we're with you, we're laughing with you, we're sympathizing with you, we're with you all the way. They were like that. In Vienna, it was a bit. Was a lot of suspicion, a lot of expectation, a lot of like, okay, now this happened. Oh no, they're doing interaction. So it was a bit like a bit like, you know, an audience that kind of has a lot of doubt. But at the same time, what I like about the piece is that it kind of slowly hypnotizes you and kind of, you know, you kind of, the idea is you warm up to the figure eventually. And so the next part would have more of a tension or a release or a conflict or something like this. And then in Helsinki, we're quite surprised because, we've heard that the Finnish people are quite shy and don't like to do small talk, things like this. And so we were like, oh no, you know what's going to happen? Like, okay, whatever. But actually it was in terms of temperature, kind of the warmest, but warmest kind of, not warm like kind of aggressive warm, but kind of like very soft, tender, warm. And and this is also the first time that we had audience crying, which was like, we've never had audiences cry ever in other places. They would say it's touching, they would say, you know, but here it's like, you know, visibly affected people and would come to us afterwards. And so I'm a bit surprised and I'm really wondering, how is this? What is here? What is possible? I mean, what is happening here?
You were saying yesterday, Janina, that you were.
Well, I think it has to do with the rumors that there's not much small talk and so on. So there's a lot of sort of Snow White behavior, like containing the emotions. So I guess it touches something in our culture where we are presenting something we are not, or that we don't dare to. Show we are thinking we're expected to behave in a certain way, or I would guess it's this why it moves people. It comes quite close actually here.
Yeah, that people keep things inside instead of sharing.
Containment, I guess.
Yes.
It's at the same time for me being here, it's like it was highly intuitive also. All the small gestures that were happening in the room, they were amplified, but in a very fine way. So I was like, wow. People are very, very sensitive to that. Mm-hmm. And in a very high degree of listening, very high, very, very, very intense. Mm-hmm. Sort of like, whoa. Mm-hmm. Precisely. So from the first, the three nights that I did it, it was a very strong degree of listening, a very strong degree of capting, of measuring what was happening. People were quite a beautiful sensitivity to what was happening. And it made me, you know, like, also change the piece here. You know, so the air climatization made me change the piece. Because it was making a buzz, right? And so then the buzz was very intense. I said, oh, it's giving me a bit of a like, whoa, a bit of a headache. So I said, I have to do something with it. So I started to use my voice. So it could like, and then through the two first segment, I put a voice where I never put a voice before. So that did the whole two first segment voicing. And that was great. That's fantastic. So then, and in the morning after the air climatization was repaired, there was no more noise. So we had to make it. We made the noise. So, yeah. So now this is like a really beautiful change in the work. Wow.
Great. Cool. Wow.
Yeah. Now I'm a bit conscious of letting the audience of this room speak as well. Should we thank the listeners of the podcast and go on to that section?
Yes, why not? And thank you so much for being here, for the artists.
Thank you, it was lovely to listen to you.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah,
thank you very much. It was great.
Thank you.
Yeah.